The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Yes, a special show today. No, that is not Chris Zaldane. That is actually Bradley Hallman.
What up?
That's pretty funny, Matthew.
Wow. And he's not a happy Bradley Hallman either.
No.
He's a pissed off Bradley Hallman.
Yeah, he's not very happy. So we are very, very thankful to have Bradley Hallman in studio today. And Brad, I'm sure we're going to get into many, many discussions about what went down at Grand Lake last week at the Open. But Matthew, a special guest coming up at the top of the hour. Yesterday, we had the discussion about what went down at what body of water in the BFL?
That would be Watts Bar. The BFL
very good. You got it correct.
Day, super tournament with a lot of, you know, basically there's a cup. There's two cups coming up for the Bass Pro Tour, and that's it for the rest of the season. So that gives us guys a little bit of downtime. And John Murray and Wesley Strader finished first and second, which led us to the discussion of how would you like to be the guy who finished third behind guys who have like $3+ million of earnings and U.S. Open and FLW Tour and Elite Series and have won 30+ boats combined. So Joe Opager, who is the media director for FLW, must have been listening to the show because as the segment ended, I got a text with the third place finisher's phone number. Mark then followed up.
Talked to him last night.
And we're going to talk to the guy.
Lance Dowdy is his name. And very interesting conversation. I think some people are going to be surprised with his take on the entire situation.
Somewhat, it's not a situation.
It is a situation.
Why is it a situation?
Because you had two guys that are fishing the top of the top when it comes to tournament fishing that go down to the AA version.
Those guys are wanting to put five in the live well. It's simple as that.
That is a situation. Not necessarily a bad situation, but it is a developing situation of which we've had numerous conversations on this show about, is it right for the best in the world to go down and fish the AA version?
Ask Brad. You just fished the BFL Super on Grain.
I don't see anything wrong with it. I'm this close to fishing the Nichols Team Tournament this weekend. Yeah. Fishing's fishing, man. Any way you can get her done. Get her done.
Now, the example that I gave to him, of which he's a golfer, and we talked a little golf for a little while, was how do you think that here in Oklahoma, when they had their little state 36-man scramble for $2,500 and Ricky Fowler shows up.
It's totally different in fishing.
I just hang on, man. Let me set up the premise. Let me set it up because the comments that he made during that discussion made total sense. And we're going to get into it when we have it on.
I think your premise is flawed, though.
Why is it flawed?
Because there's a different gap between that. Would you not agree?
You have the top of the game of golf.
No, but it doesn't matter. You could be Ricky Fowler could compete with any local pro on their course, but you could have the top in the fishing game go to a lake and they will not be the favorites because the locals there are just as they're at
that's
the Ricky
part of
Fowler
the premise
level on that lake.
Dude, that's part of the premise that he's going to discuss because he actually said that he
Brad
should
wants
have
to say something.
He should have
bad.
Caught them better.
Brad wants to say something bad.
This just comes up whenever they're winning. Like if Wesley and John
I wouldn't finish, have even known they fished in it.
Right. Right.
Which happens all the time.
Doesn't become an issue. But there have been many events this year won by tour anglers. I don't know about the BPT guys, but probably the first one. But it's not the first one they fish, though.
No. No.
So you don't talk about the others. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, and as you will see, and I want to save it for the segment, but you will see that there are some unique characteristics about the situation of which John Murray ended up winning. It's all good. I mean, I thought it was pretty cool the way that he described
it. I can give you some
it.
Examples off the top of my head. I know Greg Buck won a BFL Super Tournament of Nevada before he won the Open.
Yeah.
Brian Schmidt went back up to Champlain right after we got done with ICAST, went up there and won the BFL, which actually puts him in the regional because he fished all of them this year, and he will actually fish a regional at the Potomac River.
So
get
let me
some of that.
Let me ask you this, Brad. Then fishing's fishing, right?
Why do
we have classifications of levels, or does it even is that not even something that should be addressed in the professional fishing world to have
at,
levels
at this day and age? I'll say no.
I agree with him. What about you, Matthew?
No, I mean, I said yesterday I liked when I fished the BFLs in 2013. I fished on the Arkansas River, and the boat that took out in front of me was Jason Christie.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the coolest damn thing that had ever happened. I mean, I'm in my little 18-foot Skeeter, and I'm like, oh, that's Jason Christie.
Now, one of the questions that I did ask him is, and this happens, you tell me if this happens or not, but I believe that guys have told me that this does happen, is you will have some of the guys that really kind of admire that they are competing against these guys that are at the top level. Mm-hmm. Then you have a group of people that are absolutely pissed off because they're like, hey, they're big time. Why do they have to come down here and get the scraps?
Yeah.
Agree, Bradley?
100%. It goes both ways. You see it a lot in team trail events, depending on what state you're from. Oklahoma, we've been pretty fortunate that they don't have any no-pro rules. A lot of states with a lot of tournaments have.
Texas has a lot.
Texas
if you're
has
a guide,
lot. Those guys can't
if
fish.
You're a guide, a registered guide, or you have competed in with an entry fee of greater $1,500.
Or they'll usually make it a little higher. So, like, whatever the opens cost and whatever the coast is cost.
They'll go 100 higher.
They'll go, you know, 500 higher than that, so that it covers.
And then if you've been active in the past year, you can't fish those tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
It screws a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. I mean, for tour guys, we're traveling the country all the time. I mean, we're not getting to spend days upon days, weeks after weeks on these reservoirs that we live close to. So we're basically running a lot of history. For the most part, that's what's happening. So, you know, when I pull up there, Matt's been up there fishing team tournament on the week before, and 2 weeks before that, he fished a federation up there. I mean, you've got a month of experience up on whatever pond we're going to here in Oklahoma, and you know, we're just showing up for a couple of days of practice.
And that's why I'm saying it's not a good comparison to the major sports, because it doesn't matter what course it is. Ricky Fowler is going to be inherently better 10 times out of 10 times than the local pro. Whereas in fishing, you would expect the local pro to beat a tour level pro when that guy's been on the water for the entire year.
We're also talking about, for the most part, in general, and I understand this was a BFL Super Tournament, this specific subject, but most of the time we're talking about a one-day event. Mm-hmm. Totally different than fishing four-day events, three-day events. Different game plans, different strategies. There's more freak show involved trying to catch big bags.
All right,
I love that phrase, freak show. That's what you tried to do with this super.
Try to freak show it.
All right, we're going to have Lance on here right around the top of the hour, but the first part of the show, Bradley, we want to get into what went down last week with you at Grand Lake. Obviously, we have discussed how good you are at that body of water, and the discussion that took place prior to the show going live, it was some interesting thoughts on your part that you felt that even though you earned a check, you failed.
Yeah, it wasn't a good week. I didn't enjoy it at all. You know, I'd been there probably too long because the BFL was the weekend before, and I went up for a couple of days before that. One thing I did do is I'd spent most of my time offshore trying to find that freak show bag for that BFL. So I hadn't spent any time at all beating the banks. Continued with that Sunday a little bit offshore, and then by Monday I changed. I think Monday or Tuesday I had over 30 bites in one day. I only stuck one fish, so it was, you know, there was quite a few fish on the bank. What ended up happening, one, is I didn't fish very well, didn't make very good decisions, and day one was okay. I had the opportunity to have a lot better bag. I think I had one out shy of 15 pounds.
Sitting in 12th
one.
After day one with 14-15, Kenta Kimura was in the lead with 20 pounds, 6 ounces, but 15-16-7. You were less than 3 pounds out of the top 5 after day one.
And I really should have had that. I mean, I had the opportunity to have 17 and a half, maybe even 18. I had a couple hooked that just pulled loose. The bite was really funny. Like, you would flip in an area and it'd be like a brim, and you hadn't had a bite in a while, so you'd check him up, and sure enough, it'd be a bass. It might even be a 2.5-3 pounder. I had some problems with some hookup ratios that I don't usually have.
What are they doing when they do that? When it's the brim bite, are they?
Man, I think that it's just, you know, we were coming off of August, beginning of September, and I don't think the fish were real active. There was a lot of pressure on them, and that's what ended up happening. On day one, I noticed that there was more guys on the bank than what we traditionally see at 7:44 and a half, and because there's just not much water left on the bank, and there was quite a bit of boat traffic. On Saturday, the second day I reversed my rotation from where I started and where I finished the day. And man, it became in my head just that there was just so many boats. I'd go to run a stretch, there'd be a boat there. I'd run the next half mile down, another stretch, there was a boat. I'd go to the next half mile down, there'd be two boats sitting on a little stretch, and it's just like, damn. Let's go somewhere, you know? And I mean, it was like that for a lot of the day. And so I ended up kind of staying on some areas that I've caught fish before, but really are not as productive as some of the places that had boats sitting on them. But dude, we're talking about fishing 6 inches of water, you know? I mean, I didn't want to go follow behind. So, you know, I was surprised that the leaders were able to catch the 15, 16 on day three. Fishing shallow after 3 days of it. I'm sure just having, you know, 12 boats helped, but there was still the majority of that top 12 was caught shallow. The leader from day one and the leader of day two.
Kenta.
You know, he was sitting on an offshore deal that we've caught him off of many times. He's got a new presentation, obviously. He looked like he was throwing that big square bill a lot, that massive square bill. People see Kenta and think, oh, you know, and the Japanese guys did really well. Yeah. You know, yeah. We were talking about how many were
long.
In this.
Yeah.
Well, Kenta has a little leg up. Kenta lives part-time with a guy up at Grand named Toby Hartzell. Lives at his house. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a fluke.
Kenta was Jeffries wants to live at Toby Hartzell's house,
true.
Too. We've
Jeez.
Talked about that.
It wasn't a fluke.
No, I've seen him fish a bunch of nickels and stuff because he would be there getting ready, and he's fished around. But, yeah, there were 1, 2, 3 Japanese anglers in the top 10, 4 in the top 15.
I guess you guys should have asked me that. How many Japanese guys would make it? My number would have been closer.
There were more Japanese guys than Oklahoma guys. But so you had six and a half pounds on day two and ended up finishing in the money by a pound, cashed a $1,947.
And day two, same
check.
Thing. I had some opportunities. I had one really nice fish on for 3 or 4 seconds on day two, and another fish but at the end of the day, I still only had 5 keeper bites. It was extremely, extremely frustrating. And typical Grand showed up. I mean, this is what's happening up there right now, is that it's very difficult to be consistent. You can catch that 15 to 19 pounds one day, but if you think you're going to go out and repeat it, it is very, very difficult to do. And I noticed that a lot of the what I call locals at Grand that are really, really good there had the same problems. I think Kurt Warren had like 18 the first day and blank the second day. His partner John Pilcher had a really nice second day and struggled the first day. It's very difficult to stick day after day after day on that pond right now.
And there's a lot of you know, professional tour level anglers who are in it, and you look at the guys who cashed a check though, and it's clear that the guys who are able to grind. I mean, you got Darryl Gleason, Hallman, Stacey King, Randy Sullivan, Jim Dillard, Jimmy Mason.
But see,
Chris
even
Rowe.
Dillard did the same thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's you know, he has the glory day, 18 pounds one day.
And Stephen Browning, John Cox, Gerald Swindle. Then you've got Pilcher, Nick Kincaid, Casey Scanlon. You know, Joseph Webster. There's a bunch of guys, Wes Logan, who won. There's a bunch of guys who fished the tour who cashed checks.
It really is a grind. And if you look at the weights and you think, man, they're catching them good, I am telling you that it is not easy up there right now.
Okay, Bradley, how does a guy from Wisconsin come down, never been on the lake before, and end up winning the tournament and finding what the dude found based upon, you know, from what I've read, based upon what he found in practice?
Yep.
How does he maintain that level all 3 days?
Okay, so I looked at a lot of what they – not just first place. Second place, I believe, was Wisconsin also. So you had two guys come down and do it. Like I said, on Tuesday, I had 30 bites in one day, and those guys probably got bit somewhere around that Tuesday, Wednesday time frame when those fish were biting pretty good before everybody laid the hammer down on them. They don't have the knowledge of all these memories to run over here and check this, and this is like that, and that's like that. They stayed in those areas where the majority of their bites came from and practiced and kept rotating them. And obviously, they didn't let the 6 inches of water affect their mind as much as I did because, you know, they don't have any other options. They're all in. And they stayed with it. And also, you know, I read a little bit. I didn't get to talk to either one of those guys, but and I'd like to, but part of it's rotation, you know, just the fortunate jump in the rotation. Did I start on this stretch before anybody else had been here? And then later in the day, was I able to jump on a couple stretches that hadn't been fished in a couple hours and maybe gave that place an opportunity? Because, you know, if you pull in some of these places and you're like, ah, there's no boats here, I would literally watch a boat leave and hadn't been gone 2 minutes, another boat would come in on another area. You know, I mean, I was trying to watch everything that was going on around me. It was crazy the amount of boat pressure that was.
So lack of history helped them.
Yeah.
Did history hurt you?
I wouldn't say it hurt me. You know, it could have helped me tremendously, and I just didn't get bit. I don't know that it hurt me.
Mess with your head a little? Because you said you drove past the stretches you wanted to fish that you knew were good.
Man, there was a lot of boats fishing that stuff for the lake level. I'm telling you that. I was aggravated that there was so much boat pressure. And I think that, you know, a lot of it because the rest of the lake was fishing so poorly. You know?
Yeah.
Teaching lesson then. You mentioned rotation.
Yeah.
Everyone's heard about rotation. Explain what a rotation is, how you figure out. You hear a guy say, I got out of my rotation, or I got in the right rotation. Sometimes it just sounds like luck, and other times it sounds like really good decision making. But what is a rotation? How do you decide where to start, and how do you decide when to change it? For the local guy that's going to go fish a tournament, he's like, man, I want to get in a rotation. Brad always talks about a rotation. What the hell's a rotation?
Rotation a lot of times is not starting where you had your biggest bite, maybe where you got the most bites, because you want to start the day with some fish in the box, and it just kind of settles you down and leaves you in that rhythm. And rhythm has a lot to do with the rotation. You know, if you always feel like you're kind of out of time and out of place, like when you try to go somewhere and you get there and there's a boat or somebody just pulled up or somebody's just leaving, yeah, it messes with you. You know, I don't know what it is about us, but we don't like fishing behind people, and it's aggravating in certain situations. So a good rotation a lot of times is luck, dude. I mean, I don't care who tells you what, there's some luck involved, because I mean, you're rolling the dice. I mean, you don't know where the other 149 competitors are going or not going. You're not running their system, right? So I mean, let's be real here. I mean, there is some luck involved. You know, you get fortunate and you roll in on a spot that the fit. I mean, also, I mean, you've got eight places that you got bit pretty good in. How do you know which one that they rolled in and which one they rolled out of? Talking about the fish, you know. I mean, there's some of those places that a couple 4-pounders swam up there overnight and are sitting there waiting on you. And there's other places where four of them left this morning.
And you don't know which those are.
You do not sometimes.
All right. So, like in the NFL, you hear guys talk about how they'll have a game sheet. Like, these are the first 15 plays of the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they're going to run them and that. In a rotation that you have, do you say, I'm going to start here, then go here, 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 and here? Or does that rotation change based on what happens at the first couple stops? Or do you run your first eight spots in that order regardless that you've decided the night before?
Well, there's always going to be some changes. I mean, boat traffic can change it. Weather with wind can change it. We had really high winds the first day of the event, and it really affected the bite, you know, obviously because we were fishing so shallow. So you couldn't be in that. So that even congregated guys even more, right? So there's other variables. But, yeah, I mean, generally speaking, yeah, I have a plan that I'm going to start here. I actually started in an area that I had eight bites out of. It's a pretty good size area, but I had eight bites out of it on Tuesday or something. And I don't think we caught one or two fish. But the thing that surprised me, here was the deal. I was boat number seven going out that morning, and I start in this area. And I think one other boat came in there at some point in time, and I was there for an hour and a half that morning. It surprised me that no one else came. No one.
Wow.
And I didn't start on it day two. I finished there day two and never saw a boat. Now, I did see a boat at the end of day one in there, and it was one of the guys that finished in the top 12 also. But, yeah, I mean, rotation is got some different variables to it always, and it's always changing and evolving. But there's something about getting in that rhythm with the rotation, and things are just kind of going good. that's what you want in, you know, where you're calm, relaxed, catch a fish or two off of maybe every other spot.
Yeah. One thing that I've really kind of taken into fact from this conversation so far is the fact that you said you went back and you read and you looked at what some of the guys did. Do you do that every tournament or?
Yeah. I'm also very aware of who all's around me.
Really?
I even aware in practice. Like Stacey King, the first day I saw him, he was running some really good stuff. I saw him before I'd even put my boat in, dude. I drove over and I drove over the road and I saw from the road that boat.
Yeah.
And that boat is very similar to Van Damme's boat. And I was like, who is that in that boat?
Yeah.
Well, later in that day in practice, I got a little closer, saw him, and then that's who it was Stacy. Then I obviously saw him in practice, saw Tommy Martin a lot. I was very aware of who all I had around me. Wes Logan.
The two coasts I fish with Brad, every time he sees me in practice, he just does a U-turn and just puts it on pad, drives the other way. He's like,
yeah. No, you definitely, you know, I think a lot of us do. I mean, you definitely pay attention to who all's around you. Obviously, for me, the tough thing in the open was that I don't know who everybody is. There was a lot of boat wraps and things of boats that I was unfamiliar with. Wes Logan was in a boat that was not his because he fishes on FLW Tour with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed him actually going down a stretch. So we talked for a second. That's the only way I knew who he was.
So, biggest thing that you took away from the 2 weeks that you spent up at Grand Lake, even with the immense history that you have on that body of water, what's the biggest takeaway from a learning perspective that the next time you're in that same situation, you learn something from?
I think the biggest mistake that I made was just mental. Man, by day two, I had really just was so aggravated at how much pressure there was. And there was obviously still some fish to be caught because they did catch them. And they even caught them on day three. So there was more there than what I was given credit for.
Now, obviously, Brad, you have a Costa series coming up in a couple weeks.
Right.
So there's probably going to be some similar stuff going on. So you're not going to let all the cat out of the bag exactly what you were doing. You did a good job of describing it in generalities, which leads me to the press release from the BFL Super on Lake Hartwell,
okay,
which was won by...
Ramey.
Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie Ramey.
He's won 10 now.
Yeah.
He's 33 years old. He's good. This is probably the best. You know, we've been joking for the last week about good deep structure on the mid-lake region at Grand, which is where it won. So Rampy says he didn't want to divulge too much because he has a BFL regional on Hartwell coming up in 2.5 weeks. So this was his pattern. Quote, I ran around a lot and fished pretty much the whole lake. Rampy said, from takeoff to the dam, up all the rivers, I just hit the places where I know they live.
How's that, Bradley?
That's as general as you can be. From takeoff to the dam.
Do you know how long the Seneca and Tougaloo rivers are in there?
Yeah.
And from takeoff to the dam is a solid 20-minute run wide open.
Yeah. He couldn't have fished all of it.
Well,
I tip my cap to that very descriptive winning pattern.
He didn't want anybody to pick up on anything, right? That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. All right, Bradley. Oklahoma. Matt and I have talked about this, kind of the center of attention. And since we have you in studio, a big Elite Series event coming up. Obviously, they moved it from Fort Gibson to Tin Killer.
Yeah.
You know, the largemouth have to be over 16 inches. And one thing that I did, I looked at the weather forecast. And Friday and Saturday, specifically Friday more than Saturday, they're calling for a lot of rain. Rain, clouds. Mm-hmm. How much is that going to change what these guys do on Tin Killer? And is the weather going to be a huge factor going into the weekend?
I know that a lot of those guys not being there and reading about Tin Killer and just – listening to some of them, you guys even had Zal Dane on here. The smallmouth is in their mind. You know, that's what they're thinking. Dude, that place is still Oklahoma. It's still got Oklahoma twist to it, and that's what you'll see when this thing's said and done. It'll be about a jig. It'll be about a buzz bait. It'll be about some type of crankbait, square bill. It's going to be about grinding, and it'll be largemouth. If the sun comes out, those marinas are going to play again. You know, we had the high school national championship up there last year, and those kids figured out a deal with the spoon. But with the high water and the flow that we've had this year, it's going to make the largemouth bite better on the bank.
What about the rain and clouds and all that and everything? That's going to help out tremendously, isn't it?
Top water buzz bait. Mm-hmm.
So you think this thing will be one on top?
I don't know if it'll be over one half overall, there's definitely going to be some good fish caught on top water with that weather coming in and that clear lake.
I was trying to remember the last big tournament that was won primarily using a topwater and not a frog.
Yeah, I got some texts. We had talked about that and we came off. It would be when Elam won. Didn't he win the Angler of the Year deal on Chattoog using a silver walking bait?
I think that's what.
On a topwater.
We came up with.
Well, we didn't. Yeah. I forgot it. And one of our viewers actually wrote in about it.
Yeah.
There were a number. I think Canterbury almost won that cup, remember, on a buzz bait.
Yeah,
up the river on Murray. There's been a number of those.
What's the lake level?
Oh, the biggest one was Justin Atkins. That was another one that we forgot in the Forest Wood Cup on Lake Murray.
That's right.
But you're also talking about blueback lakes. Now, you put an asterisk in there and say a non-blueback herring lake that was won exclusively using a topwater, and now the water gets a little muddied.
Yeah.
Because that's how you catch those fish out there. I mean, that's a totally different deal than an Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama, it doesn't have bluebacks in it.
All right, real quick. Yesterday, I forgot to address a comment on the instant feedback from Austin in Alabama. Said, hey, Elite Series is in Oklahoma. Are you guys going to do blowout coverage and all that and everything? Matt is going to be there for a couple days. I'm actually going to be there for one day. But the uniqueness from a technology standpoint, we have talked about how the cell service is not that great on Lake Ten Killer. We're more about covering the story after the story has developed. So just because it's in Oklahoma really is no different if it was in Kansas or Missouri or Texas or wherever it is. Yeah, we are based in Oklahoma, and we are going to go to the event, but as far as coverage standpoint, majority of our coverage is going to be post tournament. Talk about what happened and analyze what went down on Lake Ten Killer. So it is what it is. Hey, Ben in Minnesota also said, what about the Lake Travis event for topwater?
Yeah, Drew Benton also caught some fish on a spoon there.
Yeah.
Some key fish on a spoon and was around the marina docks. But yeah, there were some really solid fish that were caught on that Vixen and a spook at the Lake Travis, but not exclusively.
The Vixen. What is it with the Vixen?
It's awesome,
always,
man.
The Vixen.
It's awesome. It's great. I wish I had thousands of them. They're awesome. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back, get into a little BFL discussion with Lance Doughty. Everybody, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Serious about catching fish, that HDS is a dead giveaway. You've got the best fish finding sonar money can buy. Time to build the ultimate fish finding system with live sight sonar. See what your lure is doing in real time. Watch fish strike as it happens. See for yourself. Take the live sight sonar 30-day challenge. If live sight sonar doesn't help you find and catch more fish, send it back, no questions asked.
Gamagot's the G Finesse Series. In my opinion, the G Finesse Series is the only lineup of hooks you need for any fishing you do.
But I know a lot of guys haven't used this hook yet. G Finesse Series has the nano coat on the hooks. And the nano coating makes the hooks sharper, smoother, for a better hookup ratio.
20% stronger than black nickel. Wow, that is incredible. That's a lot of strength.
My Gamagot's G Finesse Series, perfect finesse fishing for you.
Check out the G Finesse series of hooks by Gamagatsu.
The heart of the Bass Cat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. BassCat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to BassCat. Feel the rush.
Guys, Gerald Swindle, Sunline Pro Staff. If you're a flipper, a slack line hook setter, you're really putting a lot of impact into your hook set, look for the shooter. It comes off the smooth, really smooth. Like when you're flipping, it is smooth. If you're gonna be drop shotting and cranking, sniper's the deal, man. It seems like it's a little bit less likely, like on a sharp hook set, it don't seem like it likes it as much. But for coming off the spool on spinning rod, leaders, cranking, like if I'm gonna throw a big plug at Gunnersville, I've still got strong tensile strength. It's not gonna give out on me, but yet the line's thin enough for it to get down. So to me, shooter takes a hook set, snipers for everything else. So if you're gonna slack line them, go shooter.
The name SPRO says it all. SPRO stands for sports professionals. When you look at the pro staff that SPRO has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a SPRO bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
Hey guys, Cliff Perch here with AFCO. I've got the new camo hooded Reaper. It's gonna be a great thing both for fishing and hunting this fall. I can tell you a couple of the features about it. Got the face mask like all the Reapers do, vented in front. It's got the fleece on the inside, so it's really comfortable. It's super warm. When you come down to the pocket, it's got this little snap system called Block Tapey, and it's silent. You know, it doesn't make that sound that other snaps and other systems that hook it together make. Great for hunting, and it's gonna keep that stuff in your pocket.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday. Brad Hallman in studio, and it is time to go to our special guest today, Matthew. You want to set it up one more
Lance,
time?
Yeah, Lance Doughty finished third in the BFL Super on Watts Bar. He had 12-11 on the first day, 12-1 and 4 fish on the second day, with a grand total of 24 pounds, 12 ounces for a $1,444 check. What is of significance is that John Murray finished in first. The John Murray. What do they call him out west? The greatest angler to come out of the West Coast, 30-plus boat wins, and Wesley Strader, who is, I think, undoubtedly one of the top five hottest anglers over the past 3 years on both the FLW Tour, the Bassmaster Elite Series, and the Bass Pro Tour. So we thought it would be interesting to get Lance on to see what his thoughts are. His first top 10 with FLW, but legendary anglers ahead of him in this BFL that had, how many boats did it have? About 65 boats.
Okay. All right, let's bring him in. Lance, you there, man?
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks for taking time out, and a good performance at the regional, but man, two guys kind of got it done a little bit better than you.
They did get it done quite a bit better than I did, I'll have to say.
Well, Matt and I both thought it'd be cool to get you on the show and just get your thoughts on the fact that, you know, this is a BFL, which a lot of fans out there and a lot of other anglers consider it to be kind of the AA version of professional fishing. And here you got two guys, two of the greatest in the game right now, and one who's probably won more boats than any other guy on tour in John Murray. What are your thoughts about getting beat by two guys that compete at the highest level of this game?
Well, I think if anything, you ought to be proud to say that you was right there close enough that I was one fish from having a chance to beat either one of them. You know, I think it's a great deal to be able to have a chance to fish against guys like that.
Now, did you know these guys were in the Derby before you guys launched on the first morning, or did you, like, weigh in the first day and be like, hey, I know those guys?
Oh, no. I mean, you see them down there all the time. John Murray fishes a lot of local tournaments. You see him. I mean, so you seen them pull in the ramp in the morning. You knew who they were.
The other interesting thing is John Murray, this was not the first BFL that he had fished on this lake. He fished what earlier this year? He finished 16th. Because he didn't win, we didn't really talk about it. It's kind of the same thing Brad was talking about. Craig right. Powers also fished that one earlier in the year. So you actually beat John Murray in the first one this year, correct?
And Strader fished the first one this year too, actually.
Oh, and you beat both of them.
Yeah, so they just pretty much come back and got their revenge for it, I guess.
Well, as we talked a little bit last night, Lance, you know, so many people across the nation might think that this is a great thing to be able to compete at the highest level against two guys that are obviously in the top echelon of this sport. And then you have the other side of the people that say, hey, those guys have their own platform. And, you know, why are they coming down here trying to take my money? What are your thoughts on that, and really, what are your feelings, having been through it, you've experienced it, what are your feelings about the situation that people might think about these guys fishing a BFL?
Well, I think anybody that looks at it as a negative is looking at it the wrong way, because, I mean, if you get the opportunity to have them out there, especially guys like these two, they'll sit down and take the opportunity to talk to you and sit there. I mean, just cut up with you and treat you like they've known you your whole life. They're extremely good guys, and I think you're not going to get any better if you don't compete against better competition, is how I look at it.
It's a good way of looking at it.
I feel like if you have any intention on getting better, that's the way to do it. And if you live around here and you've got a problem with fishing against professional anglers, you need to move.
Now, explain that a little bit for people across the nation that may not be familiar with that area. It is somewhat unique because there are so many guys that are good on those bodies of water in Tennessee.
Well, I mean, the lake we're on is in between Chickamauga and Fort Loudoun and Tellico. So, I mean, you go to Fort Loudoun and Tellico, and I've fished weeknight tournaments up there, and Brandon Coulter's been there. And you see Ott Defoe up there. He's generally on up the lake. But, I mean, you go down to Chickamauga, and any given day you'll go down and see Michael Neal down there fishing, or you'll see, I mean, every once in a while you'll see Andy Morgan. It seems like he don't get out very much. And you'll see Strader down there, and Watts Bar is the same way. I mean, you grew up around them your whole life fishing like that. I mean, you don't pay any attention to it. I mean, it's, you know, they're there, but the fact is they have every right to be there just like I do.
It's a great way of looking at it. Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you a fishing question. I'm just curious, is there anything that you could have done during this event where you finished third that you might have been able to pull it out and obtain the victory?
Well, I only had four fish the second day, so catching number five, all I needed was a 4-pounder to win it. So that's and I had a I had a 5.8 the first day, and I had one the second day that was probably a little bigger. So all I had to do was catch one more good, you know, kicker-sized fish, and I'd have won it.
Nice. Nice. Now, I'm not familiar with your age. Are you a young guy, old guy? Do you have aspirations to take it up to the next level?
Yeah. Yes, I'm 22 years old.
Okay.
And I
was hoping to one day hopefully make it to the next level. Yes.
You finished fourth this year in the points too. That's good.
Yeah, I mean
that's good.
I probably could have finished a little better if the guys that were in first and second finished in the two places behind me at this last tournament. But you know, there's some really good anglers we have around here, and a lot of them didn't fish this tournament or this trail. Even mm-hmm. some of the better anglers around here, you know, there's a young fellow that fishes Watts Bar a lot. That's his last name Kenley, and if he'd have showed up this week, he'd have stomped everybody's eyes out. So,
all right,
He had almost 23 pounds down there last weekend. So
wow. All right, last question. Last question, man, and then we'll let you go. I'm curious,
yes,
did either one of the guys spend some time with you on that final day and give you any advice, or do you, you know, was there any guidance there? Did you take that opportunity to actually learn a tremendous from what these guys did?
Yes, sir, absolutely. I sat in the line while everybody was weighing in and talked with Strader almost the whole time I sit there. And then after the weigh-in, I probably talked to Mr. Murray for over an hour.
Wow.
Standing there in the parking lot. And I talked with Mr. Murray for a long time the Saturday afternoon, too. And they're both the kind of guys that if you ever get the opportunity to meet, you need to take the time to walk up and meet them and speak with them.
All right, man. Very cool. Well, Matt and I and Bradley, we all wish you the best of luck in your endeavor and trying to take it to the next level. And third place, still a good finish, but it sounds like that you are headed in the right direction, man.
Well, thank you, sir, and I hope y'all have a great day.
All right, man. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Have a great afternoon.
All right, there you have it, Lance Dowdy, and interesting take, but I think a good take.
He seems like he has a lot more perspective than I did at 22.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear you say 22, so I was like strong. But, yeah, I was expecting 30 to 40 years old. But looks like he's got the same outlook, just like what I was talking about, a lot of guys have. And while he was talking, we were surprised because we looked at the first BFL this spring on Watts Bar, and he said Strader had fished also, and we hadn't seen him, and he was 46th or 47th in that event.
Exactly what Bradley said.
Right.
You only hear about it when they win.
When they win.
What were you doing when you were 22? Did you ever have a tournament, like a specific tournament, where you were like, I got to stand next to this guy in line, or this guy came up and talked to me? Like, what was that moment for you?
I fished one of the first top 10s I made was a Kentucky Lake in a regional event, and Dan Moorhead had won his third or fourth Costa at Kentucky Lake. And getting to visit with Moorhead was a big deal. You know, I was young in my 20s, and he was pretty open and had a nice conversation. It was a big deal to be able to visit with him. At that time, Dan was just on fire. Another guy that I really remember killing it when I was young was Kobe Krieger. I mean, just on fire.
Yeah.
He was Mr. What was it? They were Everstars then, and that's kind of his nickname.
Yeah, he was. He was Mr. Everstar.
Yeah, because he had won so much at that level.
And the championships and everything. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that. Mine's with Brad.
Really?
It was the first time that I felt, holy cow, I kind of figured it out and I did something right. It was on Grand Lake in a Nichols tournament, and I think you finished second or third, and I was fishing with my buddy Juice, and we finished fifth, but we were fishing brush piles in the mid-lake region.
No, we really were.
Good structure in the mid-lake region.
Good
Grand
deep
Lake.
Structure.
No, we really were. And I remember I pulled up on one, and I had like five or six, and I'd figured this all out on myself. And I had like five or six brush piles. I think we had like 18-something, and Brad had like 19. And we came back, and I was like super pumped because I was going to cash a check in a Nichols.
Yeah.
And this was back when you were – a pessimist, and you're like, why are you wasting your time? You're never going to compete against those guys at Grand. You drive down and practice for 2 days. You're not even from here.
That's a long time ago, bro.
And I said, I'm going to show that jackass. I'm going to go down there and practice so hard. So anyway, there was a point in the day where Brad, you were fishing with Jeff Miller.
Back to the rotation, yeah.
You were in the rotation.
Spots. I remember this.
He was on a spot, which was a badass rock ledge. It had a brush pile behind a buoy. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get on it, so my next rotation was probably 200 yards away on the next point, and it had a brush pile, and I rolled up, and we caught a couple, and I saw them catch a couple. Yeah. And we got to the weigh-in, and Brad came up. And, I mean, I'd known you, but we hadn't ever really fished. It was probably, 8-9 years ago?
Probably, yeah.
And he came up. He's like, he kind of asked me some questions about it, and then he's like, well, you're doing the right thing, man. Yeah. Like, you figured it out. And I was like,
he was.
Damn, that's impressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's cool when people that have been successful – and then have a name and have established themselves, actually say something to you and take an interest in you, even if it's a small interest.
You got that with a bunch of good guys from the Ozarks because fished with all
the
those
one
guys.
That I remember, and I don't know if we've talked about this guy before, but I know Bradley's very familiar with this guy, was I had my first top 10 in a Central Pro-Am, and Jackie Davis spent some time with me, and that was inspiring. And for people in the Midwest, you should know who Jimmy and Jackie Davis were because those two guys dominated for so many years.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if they still fish that much. I think they do a little bit.
I was actually asking. I just went blank and just stayed with me all week. I'm so sorry. Anyway, they were telling me that, they do still fish a little, but not very much.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably two of the most impressive people to ever throw the LBJ.
Oh, yeah. No, they're the Jig Brothers.
Yeah.
By the way, I came up with John Murray. You were trying to come up with the whatever. He's got to be the boat collector.
Yeah. Not the bone collector, the boat collector.
The boat collector.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kennedy has like 11 in his backyard that much.
Yeah. All right.
He's won like, I think, 34 boats it was.
Mm-hmm. And it's a zillion.
And like 11 trucks.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
The boat collector. I like that.
All right. A couple questions, Bradley, from the instant feedback. Chris in Colorado wants to know, is freak show or bust just an excuse for sucking?
Yeah, pretty much.
No, it's not for Brad, because what you have to understand, Brad's won 2 tour events. He's done the, oh my God, I've cashed 3 checks and qualified for the tours and qualified for the elites and made top 12s before.
So
you're at a different level. That's not what you're trying to do.
But I get what he's saying, because I get tired of guys getting on stage and they're like, I swung for the fence. Well, what the hell is swinging for the fence? You know, I mean,
I hate that.
But those are guys who are fishing for points.
Right.
Yeah. That's just stupid to me.
So like this last week that I just did the open, and I wasn't trying to freak show it. I just freaking didn't catch them like I should have caught them. The BFL was different because I literally never went to the bank knowing that there was a shallow bite. Like, there's got to be one, But I knew that, 15 to 17 is like top end, and not that that's not good. I mean, it ended up winning that tournament 15 a day. But the bites that you get offshore at Grand right now are 4-pounders or small ones, and the 6s are the upper end. If you can get 5 of those, it's over.
How difficult is it, Bradley, and how much of an accomplishment is it to go out and average over 15 pounds a day at Grand Lake this time of the year for 3 days?
Very, very difficult. I mean, near impossible.
Yeah.
But you're going to fish the upcoming Costa way differently than you fished the BFL.
A lot's going to change between now and then.
But you're also fishing for the points there.
Yep, yep. Well, I'll fish it just the same way I did the open. I mean, when the open came up and the BFL was over, then it was time to go to work and try to find some other fish, square bill and buzz bait, and, the typical deal.
All right. Matt wants to know, do you think that there's going to be some close quarters at Ten Killer, and will the community holes come into play?
Yeah, the community holes are definitely going to play. The lake's like 2.5 foot high right now. I just looked it up right when we were doing the show earlier. But it is falling pretty quick. So there is going to be some bush flipping stuff going on. I really think that overall, as far as the size of the lake, they'll be able to handle that field. That field's not, what are there, 75 or 80 of them? Is that right?
75.
So that lake can handle 75. I mean, we fished 150, 200 boat tournaments there before.
Yeah.
There'll be some places that are crowded. There'll be some guys sharing a few places. I look for those guys in practice to fight over those marinas. I think that's going to happen just because that's what's out there. Because they were thrown on this, and they don't get. I don't think they were able to get any information. And the only information out there that's really public is that high school national championship from last year.
I think it was was it college?
Maybe it was college. I think it was college. High school. Yeah. You're right. It was. It was college.
Okay, so here's given the conditions on 10 Killer right now, and you don't name any names out there, but give me the type of angler who you expect to excel. Give me some qualities of the angler who you think will catch them on 10 Killer over 4 days, given the conditions.
Versatile. It's going to be someone that's. Look who lives there. That's without saying any names. Someone who styles fishing is that style.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. It's going to be somebody that likes to throw some jigs and crankbaits and power fish.
Yeah, I agree. You agree, Matthew?
Yeah, I think that the top water might play a little bit more than people are expecting. I mean,
Not me. I think it's going to be a massive player because of the weather going into the weekend.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a big player, but there's, you know, the time of year that it is, there's a lot of fish on those docks. A lot.
Yeah.
For 4 days?
Oh, yeah. You may see an LBJ come into play. LBJ. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, look at Grand. Anytime we come there, at some point, the docks become an issue, right? I mean, mm-hmm. when you get down to the final top 10 guys, mm-hmm. you know.
There's always some guy.
But there's always the 80 that fished them, too, that don't do any right. good, you know, and the guys don't ever see that. They're like, we'll just go fish the docks. Well, there's 5 million of them. Yeah. You know,
there ain't 5 million on 10 Killer, though. There's a couple marinas. There's a couple good stretches of docks.
There are some good stretches of docks on that lake, and there's plenty of them to fish.
There's I one think, that are completely gone because of the tornado.
Yeah, I think I've fished every dock that isn't good on 10 Killer. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of rubble and stuff in the water too. Now
it's also the time of year where we've got fish shallow, we got fish deep. You know, there's brush pile fish, there's dock fish. It's going
to
be.
Will you have to do two or three different things to win this, or will the winner do one thing for 4 days with slight variation?
Probably, it seems like it's usually doing one or two things, but he's going to be fortunate.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard because the lake's small.
All right, Bradley, greatly appreciate you all the time coming in here, breaking stuff down, even when you have, as Matt would put it, a little bit of success.
Yeah.
Brad was like, hey, at least you cast a check. I walked in before. I said, hey, at least you stuck in for a check. He's like, I don't care. It sucked.
It wasn't sucked. What I was looking forward to.
All right, we're going to get you back in here after the Coast event, so probably sometime at the end of October into November. Would love to have you come back in and break stuff down. Matthew, good show tomorrow. Another in-studio guest. Why don't you tell the people about it?
We got him booked?
Yeah, he's booked.
About 3 years past due?
Yeah.
Zach Burge.
Got Burge coming.
Yeah. Jeffrey's awesome. Coaches at his high school.
You got well, I used to.
Is he coming
I used
in?
To.
Used he's coming to. In studio?
Yeah, he's going to be in studio.
Sweet.
Another guy that I remember, I used to fish the BFLs against him when he was like way younger than me, and he always had his stuff buttoned up, like always just pristine looking. And then he'd go out and catch him.
Yep.
So Costa Championship there, FLW Tour Rookie of the Year, multiple top tens, great year on the Bass Pro Tour, was in the running at the Red Crest. Was that guy who was part of the 100-pound swing, was 60 pounds ahead of Edwin after the first two days and ended up losing to Edwin by 40 pounds. So one of those guys that really excelled and is versatile, has proven that he can grind it out and he can also catch him in a slugfest. So like I said, way past due, especially with all the top 10s in the Forest Wood Cups that he's had. I could go on and on about it, but he's going to be in studio
tomorrow.
Yeah, to talk about his year. I have to see. I think he made the third cup.
I think he did.
It's coming up sometime. So. Yeah.
All right. We'll see. And then also tomorrow, I got to figure out what I'm going to do when Matt and Brad are gone. Probably the entire month of October. So I'm looking for a way to get a guest fill-in for a few days. So we'll talk more about that.
You might be able to get Brad to Skype in from Vegas. And I can Skype in from Grand. We'll be able to patchwork it together. Kenyon? Gary? Drew?
Drew.
I've had some requests for Drew, so we'll see.
We'll see. He's a regular contributor to the Pontoon Quarterly now.
Yeah, I'd like to get a guest.
Burge.
You know,
You're going to have Burge here tomorrow. Hit him up.
Might do that. All right, great stuff. Bradley, thank you. As always, tomorrow, Zach Burge, and then we will continue to see what we're going to do during the month of October. All right, everybody, that's going to wrap things up here on a Tuesday. We're out of here.